Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I am your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my baby, Alex Fasella.
Hello.
And we come at you today with another mini episode about our new favorite musical, just kidding, Taboo on Broadway.
We won't let it go.
We won't let it go. We talked about the West End, and now it is time to discuss a transfer.
Exactly.
Dear Alex, how did you find yourself watching this week after? Because we both went the opposite direction. You watched the West End first and went to Broadway. I watched Broadway first and went to the West End. So I feel like we will have some differing opinions.
We will, because I thought this one was at least a significant chunk better than the London cast, if I'm honest. I thought that it's still not great, but it's still oversung. The plot doesn't make sense, but the plot makes a lot more sense because they cut out all the extraneous characters. They, when they couldn't, they kind of made jokes about it, which I thought was enough to get me by. And the A and B stories still have only tangentially anything to do with each other. Yeah. But I still thought it was a better, I think Rosie did good work. And my main, I don't know if this is just because the camera angle, camera depth was different on the two videos. I felt like the London one was like gritty to the point of being like off-puttingly kind of gross. Like it looked sticky. Whereas the Broadway, I felt like the Broadway one shined it up just enough that it was like intriguingly gritty and not like, ugh, you look like you all smell bad. You know what I mean?
They Broadway'd it.
Yeah, and I think that's honestly what the show kind of needed, because if we're going by the show's own logic, it wasn't punk, it was instead of dressing down, it was dressing up. So I feel like this show should be just dirty enough that you're like, oh, okay, and not like, ugh.
Yeah, it needed the Broadway budget of something a little more.
It did.
Finished.
And also, bravo to the book writer for not being like, well, we need 10 minutes of crowd work in this, otherwise it won't work. They fixed whatever that problem was, so good.
Yeah, thank God. Yeah. They also added a framing device.
Which I enjoy, and you not so much, but I'm kind of a sucker for framing devices sometimes.
I don't usually like them, because I'm like, am I now just watching your memory of something that happened? Like, if there's a framing device, I need to know why we are framing it with that person. And I don't think it was made clear why they were telling the story.
Yeah.
Those two. Like, why did we choose Big Sue and Raul Esparza, Philip, the narrators?
Yeah, you're right. Because it is fun to watch them squabble over. They're both, like, mildly unreliable narrators.
But
You do make a great point of, why them? Why wouldn't it be is it Nicola, or am I thinking of Hinky Boots, the Lee Bowery's
wife? No, Nicola, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, it should probably be her and maybe Marcus. Like, it should be whoever was just removed from the main characters by only one degree. So these two characters are charming, and it's fun to watch them go, that's not how it happened, this is how it happened.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right that there's a little too much, a couple steps of difference that it's like, okay, well, why wouldn't it just be someone who had better information?
Or why is it not somebody who's like learning from their past experiences and will like take something from the story they're telling? Like, why had they gone back to that theater?
They went back because
it's getting demolished.
No, because they're
thinking of Follies.
There was going to be a photo shoot and interview. So I think they're prepping for their interview. So that makes enough sense that I'm
right.
Happy.
That's fair. Then maybe it should have all been felt like a documentary.
Yeah. Like, maybe it should have been a little more come from away.
Or just, yeah, somehow they should have narrated more often, like gone back to that place maybe one more time.
Yes.
Instead of just at the beginning and the end.
Yeah, because I love a device, but the device has to A, earn its place, B, it has to be consistent enough that it doesn't feel like, hey, you know that device? Well, I guess it's not working for the next 20 minutes. Why?
Yeah, because they even, like, the beginning was good. Like, he put on the dress, and then he transforms, and then he's in the past. And then they're narrating. She yells at him for giving Boy George his name. And then I feel like they disappear a little.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to, it is interesting when you watch something adapted, especially something that wasn't great before, and then you see the product after they try to fix the issues. It's always interesting to me what you can fix and what either the new writer didn't realize was still an issue, or if they were like, hey, if I fix this, there's no show, so I have to leave it a little bit flawed just for so we can have a show at all. So it is interesting that, like, I don't know if it's from adaptation or if they just thought this was good and done, but it's like some of the London issues are still lingering in this, even though you got rid of quite a few of them and it is a more sound product.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, maybe it's more cohesive.
Yeah. But still
lacking a little bit in the way that then when I went to watch West End and it was the Marcus Billy switch. I just like Billy so much more. I was like, oh, it can be about him and George just happens to be around.
Yeah, yeah.
And this one, I was just like, why does this guy get a song? They didn't make him important.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is, we should be perfectly honest, this is a vanity project. This is Boy George. Mm-hmm. And vanity projects are rarely, even if they're good, they're rarely great because there's too much ego involved.
Yes. I think especially this time around because he was in the show.
Yes.
And if you read some accounts of the production of this show, the book writer and the director were just either too new or too scared of George that if he was not a good enough actor for a particular scene, they just cut it instead of rewriting it or trying to make him better.
So that's why Lee Bowery is in and out as opposed to being a through line like he should be.
Every like hard emotional scene they just cut because he wasn't good at it.
Interesting.
Yeah, and he wouldn't work on it. He would just say no and like storm out of rehearsal.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which then just brings me to, well, then why did we need him in the show? And how much better would it have been if they just cast somebody to be that part instead of like the stunt casting of George being in this show, I think was their fatal flaw.
Yeah. Get like Brooks Ashmanskis or something.
Who can like, get someone who can act.
Yeah, just get someone. That's a good idea. Let's get someone.
Because then they could have really worked on the script in a way that it made sense and was cohesive. And there was an emotional reason for Lee Bowery to be there at all.
Yeah.
And instead, because they'd already made the decision to stunt cast that part, they tailored it too much to his strengths and weaknesses.
It's like they stunt wrote for him.
Exactly. Whereas I think in my mind that maybe Big Sue was a placeholder for if they needed Rosie to go into the show.
It did for a second. I was like, is that Rosie? Mm-mm. It wasn't, but I thought it was for a minute that I was like, oh, that's a Rosie type.
In my like thinking about why on earth did they decide Big Sue needed more than just the two lines she had in London, I was like, oh, because Rosie could have stepped in if they needed help with tickets.
Yeah.
And I feel like it should have been the same way, like work on the show and then step into it if they need a boost.
Yeah,
it's like whereas instead he stepped in immediately and then the show wasn't good, so they never got a chance to need a boost because they just closed.
Yeah, because stunt casting, the more and more I learn about it, isn't an art form in and of itself. If you do it right, it can actually be really, really cool or at least fun, you know, if someone's not like terrible at it. But like if you stunt cast right away, Boy George is now an albatross around your show's neck. Mm-hmm. And
it also then became part of the marketing. And I think this is where I got the idea that it was a jukebox musical and that Boy George himself, whatever character he was the lead of the show, not Ewan Morton playing a young Boy George, who's fantastic still in this production.
One of the best decisions I think they made was keeping him as Boy George.
He's perfect.
He's so good. There's no reason. So the thing I was going to say before about the fact that they've now made Boy George the main character, I'm kind of two minds about, because on the one hand, it feels in a weird way, like I was saying about Vanity Project, less vain, because now Boy George is telling his own story as opposed to a boring audience surrogate is discovering him like a rare bird. And like,
sure.
So it's like, it's sort of like, but also Boy George is not the most interesting character and story in the whole world. If I'm being honest, the most interesting character in the show is like the scenery and the time, which is fine. Yeah. That's like half the appeal of Cabaret is the Kit Kat Club is like a character in the show, but you got to make sure that the tidbits I'm learning about music history are not outshining the people, because Boy George's story, I feel, gets more interesting once the drugs show up.
And I don't think they want to take the time to sit there.
Yeah, and especially my new favorite song, The Fame Game, which shreds. It's so good.
Actually,
it's so
good.
It's really good, and it's a little long, but like it's really fun, and it's staged really well, and you really feel like, oh, you got exactly what you wanted, and you're miserable. And the one reason I can think for Lee Bowery to be the B story, I don't think they nail it, but I think this is a good enough reason to try to write him as the B story.
Yeah.
He's the version of Boy George that had all the drive and the weirdness, but it just never fully happened for him. And just, he implodes because of it, because he just runs himself ragged trying to be famous, that he becomes a caricature of himself, whereas Boy George makes it and then he's miserable because it happened, you know what I mean? So they're kind of mirrors of each other. But I don't think they nail the execution, but I think that's a cool like writing dynamic.
That's interesting.
And
I wonder if maybe that was intended and never came through.
Also
like he and George rarely see each other.
Which is part of the problem is it's just like, meanwhile, in a different part of the show.
Yeah. And I think that also comes from the fact that there weren't a lot of real life scenes where they would have been together, because as George says, he didn't go out a lot.
Yeah.
Somehow he was, because of his band and his friends, he was in the but he wasn't really a club goer.
Yeah, if I had to make, which is the show's fatal flaw, because if there's no real reason for him to be at this club, George is never at the club all that much.
No.
It's a show called Taboo where the main character kind of doesn't hang out at Taboo that much. He gets his start there in the coat room, I think. But it's not Taboo yet. It's whatever his
preference. It's whatever it was before. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't know, because I don't know the era of the New Romantics. So I didn't know that Taboo was the name of a club until I watched this bootleg.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, I didn't know that that was a thing. And then I was like, oh, it's the name of a club. That's fun. Was that real? Oh, yeah. It was.
Tell me if you think this might fix some issues. Obviously, it's too late. But if we were going to mount our dreamcasted Frankenstein of the two shows that we've talked about, we could make. How would you feel about, instead of Marilyn, Lee Bowery is his buddy?
Little friend.
So they're interacting, and also you get a little Hamilton Burr, Mozart Salieri jealousy going, where they meet in the middle to bitch about their problems, but like each of them thinks the other one is making too big a deal out of it, and you get a friction there. So at least they're, even if they don't have a big fight at the end, because they don't need to, just their journeys are made clearer to be a parallel and are actually intersecting as opposed to being nebulous,
just on this opposite. Yeah
because Marilyn's fun to watch, but Marilyn doesn't really do a whole lot other than enable George, so that role is still kind of superfluous, I feel, unless I miss something.
No, I agree with you. I think you cut Marilyn and give Lee all of his stuff, like,
because Marilyn is trying to make it big too and is frustrated it's not working. It's the same character arc.
Yeah, it's the same vibe, and I think that happens a lot when you're adapting something true. Because if we were just writing this story, you and I, from nothing, like someone just brought us these fake people they had created, that would be the obvious fix, was to cut a bunch of people and combine them.
Yeah.
Hard to do when they're real people, especially real recognizable people. Because I'm sure there was a part of the audience that was like, oh, it's Marilyn. Oh, it's Lee. Like getting these like recognizable moments.
And they
didn't give a reason for people who don't already know who those people are.
Exactly.
Enough of a reason to want to watch them.
Yeah, and if I'm being honest, the New Romantic, like, I'm a music nerd, and I knew nothing about the New Romantics, which means I don't think most people do, which means whatever fan base, if they were trying to please a fan base, it must be pretty small. So honestly, it outweighs that you can't
You can't
Easter egg
appease
it like a
to,
Marvel
yeah.
movie as at the expense of structural soundness, because this is such a niche thing. Like, if you were doing a punk rock show, some of those names, like your Sid Vicious and Johnny Ramone, whatever, have seeped into pop culture enough that you shouldn't get rid of them, even if they're smaller, because people will follow along. But this, unless you give Marilyn a decent reason for being there, how many people know who this person is? I don't know, probably just the people who wrote the show. Like, or maybe a tiny niche of people who are there every night, but like not enough for it to be, unless you're just afraid of Boy George, which is very possible. It's not worth tanking the integrity of the plot, I think,
Yeah, I
for to
completely
please
agree.
like two people, you know.
Especially like you probably could have done that in the West End production when you were at a 300 seat theater and it felt sticky and immersive. Like you were all there in this little club, and sure, out of 300 people, maybe 150 of them each night were true fans of the genre.
Yeah, you lean into the cultness of it.
You move it to a 2,000 seat Broadway house, 5% of that audience is going to know what you're talking about any
Yeah,
given night. So
that's
you need
highballing it
to,
too. I think it might even be less.
yeah. So you need to start appealing to people who do not know what you're talking about.
Exactly. And honestly, if you can't justify them being there, even if you're not banking on, even if you're banking on people knowing who they are, if you can't justify them being there, you still should cut them, because if they're just there to be like, oh, it's him, well,
Yeah.
they
Or
haven't
you
earned
do
their
like a
spot.
montage where an ensemble, a few ensemble members play these well-known
Yeah.
characters and like wave, oh, look who there they are, and call it a day. Like, don't make them George's best friend for 2.5 scenes and then disappear.
Yeah, if you have to Spider-Man villain fashion show this, honestly, with a show like this, it would be the right call.
Yes, absolutely. Just to be
Lee
like, traipse them
Bowery.
out, la 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 la,
Yeah, like, look,
there we go,
it's Lee
back
Bowery, it's
to.
Nicola, it's Scorpion, it's Carnage.
Yeah, and then you just head back to like George and Philip working through their issues, and then Marcus working through
Yeah.
their issues, and
You know what? Making Philip Marilyn's part also, I think, would work, because it would give him a reason to be the narrator. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of different
he could
ways you could
really
fix the
step in and
show.
out. Yeah,
Yeah,
and
that they
because
didn't.
like Philip and George are still good friends,
That's
but I
good.
don't really ever feel that they were friends in Taboo.
I wholly agree. Whenever Philip shows up, I'm
Philip is
never.
the landlord. Philip is the
Yeah.
narrator. Philip is like a means to push him to the next plot point.
Yeah, he's a facilitator of the story. And like,
He's Mark.
he's Mark. He's Mark. And you could do a lot worse. That character is fun to watch, and it's Raúl Esparza. He's great. But
Yeah.
also, you still
Who
feel
do you
the
know
contrivance.
Raoul's next Broadway show after this?
No.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang as Caractacus Potts.
Huh. Okay.
But he's fresh off of Tick Tick Boom and Cabaret and Rocky Horror Show. So like it's all his career is the same vibe, same vibe, same vibe. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Which just makes me laugh.
Happy birthday, Philip. Want something?
Yeah, and then Company. Yeah. It's so I just looked that up today. I was like, what was he doing before this? Because I knew who he was at this point in life.
Yeah. So I'd be interested to hear, and I don't mean this in a like, my opinion is right now, I want to hear why you're wrong. I don't mean that. What when you when because you watch this in the reverse order, what changes had the London cast, what changes hadn't been made yet that you felt made it the better version?
That I thought London was better. I liked Billy's storyline better than Marcus's storyline.
I agree, because he
Because
has a
it
story.
existed. Yeah. I didn't necessarily love the like him and Kim stuff,
Agree.
but it was fine. I also was never sure why Nicola was around, even though she was there for Lee Bowery. And it does make sense. Why was his wife cut out of the other
Yeah,
production?
especially because he was a pretty much out gay man and yet married a straight
Yeah,
woman.
like that's interesting. I appreciate that they brought her in. Mm-hmm. But then you lose any backstory for now Marcus.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, oh, this guy, this like weird straight guy that's going to this gay club. Like, it was just such an interesting fix.
Yeah.
What else?
And it's interesting because we
talked about liked Lee Bowery when it wasn't Boy George.
Yeah. It's interesting because we talked about Billy and we're like, this character is like the laziest, like written, I'm going to show you dad kind of character. But because he at least has a reason for being there at all, it still feels like the better choice, even though it wasn't a great choice to begin with.
Yes. I think there is something about that at the beginning of the West End production that I just kind of sighed a sense of like, ah, I understand this plot now.
Gotcha.
Because I've seen it before. I've seen like kid goes to big city, gets rung in with this new crowd of people.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason because it will work.
Exactly. And I could just like drop in to, I don't know, like drop into the plot more, or just drop into the music more, because I could like, even though the plot wasn't anything special with Billy, I like knew where we were.
Yeah, it was something to latch onto.
So that when a song happened, I was like, I understand like whatever the given stakes of this song might be.
Yeah, I feel like this show in both versions does have a bit of a, what are the given stakes of each song? Because sometimes it's an I See Through You where it's like a moment. And sometimes it's just like, here's the kind of music that we'll be playing at a club. And we're going to sing more of it for no, as almost an establishing shot, which is fine. But they do that a lot. And it kind of, it adds a lot of filler. And none of it is bad. Like the music is, I think, even better on this version because they cut the stupid India ending. They just hint at it, which I'm fine with.
Isn't that better? Too.
And the ending is still a little contrived that they all end up in the zip, but it's also sweet, so I can live with it. So mm-hmm. The music, I think, is even stronger because they cut a lot of the moments that I'm like, this song isn't great. But also, there still is a lot of dead musical air in terms of, I like this music, but why am I hearing it other than this is a place that has music, you know?
Yeah, like, are we going to get some dialogue intercut with this song to move the plot forward, or are we just watching a club for a little bit?
Yeah, and watching a club is not the most interesting musical experience because you feel the inertia, unless they're giving you new information in the staging, but here they aren't really.
Yeah, not really at all. And then, like you said, you get I See Through You or these big emotional moments that are just kind of straight park and barks. They're also not really moving the plot around. They're just like, I'm feeling this and I'm telling you that I'm feeling this, which is very much a rock musical kind of thing, is that if you are a rock composer, rock songwriter, a lot of times the lyrics, if you're writing a pop song, are going to be more about emotions and not literally what you're doing.
Yeah.
So you're not going to move the plot forward really with a rock song.
Yeah, it's not I'm moving, it's I'm not moving.
Because I feel
this. I'm an immovable object to this other character.
Like the plot is moving forward in the way of, I'm describing my emotions so that you can understand my emotions. And then the next thing we talk about can be where we're going to have lunch. Like, but it's not like really moving the plot.
I think you accidentally described the entire feel of Taboo. Someone sings their brains out. But what's the next thing we're going to talk about? I don't know. Lunch.
Where do you want to have lunch? You want to go to the mall?
Yeah. Like, I don't think that happens, but like it happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's just interesting, like, when they're showing you a character who's just singing about how they're feeling, I enjoy it, but then I also am like, why did I, for instance, Talk Amongst Yourselves, which I think is a great song. I kind of much prefer it on Broadway as Big Sue's, mostly because I think the arrangements and the way it's used is better. But there is a moment in there of like, well, why does all of a sudden she have this song where she's dropped into the reality of the memory we're watching, yeah. But she's also the narrator. So why can't this be a narration? I don't know.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if I remember, a lot of the show is a blur. So like,
yes.
You said, hey, Zoom in 2 minutes. And I said, hang on, I'm reading a plot summary. And you said, don't worry, so am I. Do we get a whole lot of musical dealing with Nicola coming to terms that she, like, does she explain how she feels about Lee, other than Elidor saying, I miss him because he's dead, which is fine. But like, I'm marrying a man and this is a marriage of convenience or publicity. Like, does she ever open up about that? Because that's the one really interesting thing about their character relationship. And do we ever get it explored enough to be satisfying? I feel like we don't, but I can't remember.
I don't think so. I'm looking now through the song list.
I feel like they gloss over it a little
bit. Yeah, she doesn't even really sing anything besides Elidor in the second act. So yeah. All you get is love as a question mark, which kind of goes into it, but not really in a way that ends anything, because you don't have enough time. There are too many characters. There's not enough time to really see someone through.
Yeah.
You get a lot of like, here's what's going on in all these people's lives. But even George, you don't really get a satisfying character arc.
Yeah. And that kind of worked a little better in the London when you were getting glimpses of him through other people's eyes. So that's all you're supposed to see.
Yeah.
But he's the main character and you still have that same amount of plot stuff, but now it's the focus. It does fall apart a bit.
Yeah. And I was just like both productions, when he is all of a sudden fully addicted to drugs.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't see this coming at all.
Yeah.
Both times. I was like, yeah. Oh, where'd this come from? Did we not want to leave any little eggs on the way to this?
Yeah. Like Fame
Game. No breadcrumbs to this.
Fame Game does it a little bit, but like that should be the climax where once you find, either you found out right before that or you find out right after and you go, oh, I should have seen this coming. That kind of.
Yes.
It should have been hinted at. From honestly, it's something, if not lyrically, if just something about that he could be, that he's vulnerable to that sort of thing, should have been hinted at like as far back as Stranger in This World. Like we should meet him and in a few moments, we should know this guy. It's like how when you watch Hamilton, the second he goes, I may have punched him. It's a blur. So you go, oh, this guy's a ticking time bomb. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there should have been some hint of an addictive personality or of a need to self-medicate.
Yeah, and they hinted at a little bit when he and Marilyn are saying, like, we want to be famous billionaires, because you get that sort of, we're addicted to the idea of success.
Yeah.
But it comes later than you would like it, and it doesn't feel like enough of a, it doesn't quite do the job, but I can see that they were probably. But it does, you know, it
or even to show somebody else in that world with a drug problem.
Yeah.
There were no drugs at all until George is addicted to them.
I just, you're absolutely right. I didn't realize that.
Like, even if just Marilyn mentions, oh, yeah. I need my dealer. Like,
yeah, we got the crazy,
I guess there's the drug dealer. Show. Yeah.
But not enough in this show.
Yeah. So that it's not really prevalent, but even with that one, you weren't really seeing people buying drugs. There was just a drug dealer that everyone was scared of.
Yeah, and Lee Bowery could have tossed off one line about like, "Don't get too high," or you know, something where you lay the groundwork for the, like we're talking about stakes, you know?
Exactly. Those stakes weren't there. Like the stakes of, oh no, he might get addicted to drugs, were not there.
Yeah.
And so when it happened, I was just like, this is unexpected.
Yeah. Because, and I wonder, do you think maybe they assumed like, oh, they're looking at a club in the 80s. Everyone understands there'd be drugs there. And while, yes, intellectually, but when you watch a show, because every narrative is not quite our world,
mm-hmm.
it feels like the things they want to include, especially because it's a story being told to you by two different narrators.
Yeah.
If there's drugs, you have to tell me, otherwise I won't be thinking about that aspect because I don't think you're invoking it, even if it might have been there. In, like, even if I know that.
Even if it's just enough. Like, in the background or like in choreography at some point, like, you see someone do a line or like someone buys something from some, like,
yeah,
just sneak it in so that it's not like, oh, everybody else has been clean and sober this whole time. Where'd you get that?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it looks like, it, honestly, I look, if I had to say what the like thrust of the club scenes are, everyone's addicted to costumes.
Yeah.
So they're addicted to like
costumes and fame and being the best and the prettiest.
Yeah.
Not drugs.
No. No, and I wondered, were they like, oh, well, let's leave it out. Let's not say it because it's implied. And maybe they didn't realize it wasn't implied
yeah.
enough.
Yeah, or like, is this a 2003, we can't show people doing drugs until it's bad.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you could say like, oh, you couldn't show it casually because that might look like, well, you're making it look fun, but for this show to tell us, you kind of have to do that, and you would still,
because it needs to be like, oh, it's part of the fun, and then he goes too far.
Yeah, it has to be one of those things that you have to imagine that his, and I'm more than okay with us not seeing his first time, because that is a little cliche to be like, oh yeah, what line couldn't hurt, but you have to get the air of the place telling you, oh, everybody does it, it's fine, nobody's got a problem, to the point where when it turns, it can be a twist that when it turns out, oh, he has a problem, because everyone has a problem, they don't want to admit it, but George is now front and center with the problem, he becomes the elephant in the room, almost, or the breaking of the elephant in the room, I should say. So, like, you can't,
and then it becomes this, like, when they sell the story to save him,
yeah,
it's like, well, because nobody else is doing drugs, and they're all just clean, sober, happy people. Yeah. And they have these little goody two shoes have to save their friend who went bad.
Yeah, apparently everyone at Taboo is high on life.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, clearly. Okay, well, we have diagnosed the problem with Taboo. Show more drugs.
Yes. Shall we, loves?
Absolutely.
Okay, I've got three. One, as
and
I said before.
I also
before,
have three.
As I said before, the Fame Game, that song is great. And it's just you and Morton coming unglued in a funny enough way that it's entertaining, but it's also heartbreaking. Like, he really writes that line well. Mm-hmm. And as a person who is very career oriented and often gets kind of like sucked into the idea of like, I need to be famous, when I see things like this that portray it like, no, that's the bad part of making things, it really like upsets me. So I know that this is their job when I feel that. I love I know it's a little too heartstrings, but I still feel like it was the right call and it works. When they show the real footage of Lee Bowery over his deathbed, it's very endearing.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
Me too. And you know, you could say it's manipulative, but like as a viewer of theater, manipulation is part of directing. I want that to be pulled in that direction.
Absolutely. And it's good to be reminded at that point in the show, like, these are real people.
Yeah, and I like this show. I feel like when it's at its best, is almost a little bit of a History Comes Alive show, where it's right in that line of like, here's a whole little world that you knew nothing about, but was thriving in and of itself. And when it at its worst, it becomes like, this could just be anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
And my final love is I feel it's a really solid joke in and of itself, but also about the clumsiness of the show. Purposefully, I think they kind of knew it. The audience surrogate character's name is Mark Composite, because they upfront tell you like, oh, he's several people. Like the narrators admit that, and I think that's when the show leans into being like, this time period, this story, but also this time period is a little bit of a mess. Which is why I don't hate the fact that there's two narrators, because I'm sure this is a time that was both small enough and contentious enough amongst the people who were there that these fights are probably like, people have them all the time. That's not how it happened. This is how it happened. And
yeah,
everyone was
like
on
telling
drugs.
A story with your best friend about like two nights ago. Like, just like, no, they were there. No, they were there. Like,
yeah. And sure. And also like the same thing, like them arguing over how Boy George got his name. Cause one narrator literally claims to have affected the story. And the other one says, no, you didn't. And that's great.
Yeah. Don't take, I know. I liked that part a lot.
Me too. And sure. calling out that, like, oh, he's a composite of several people, honestly zaps some of the stakes out of it, but not quite enough that I still won't go with it. But, like, if I know this is several people, I'm just like, okay, so you've just admitted
that this person isn't real in a world of real people.
Yeah, and it's like, you're lying to me, which I'm fine with if it's a lie to tell a greater truth, which I think you're doing, but it's, you've admitted that, like, hey, this is a clumsy lie, let's just talk about it, but, like, you've showed me too much of your magic trick a little bit. I'll go with it, but I can't not think about that now.
Yeah, it then gets a little too meta.
Yeah, it's a fun meta joke.
Or, like, self-aware.
Yeah, it's, like, a fun meta joke, but also I feel like, if I'm honest, it might be a little too meta, and it might actually help zap some stakes out that shouldn't be.
Totally. Because it's like, oh, so should we not care about him?
Exactly. It's like, oh, cool. So I should just look up on Wikipedia who these people really were.
Great. And what actually happened. Cool. Thank you for the info.
Yeah. And I'm still mad about how the fact that Nicola's married to Lee Bowery, and it's a marriage of love, but in a different way, and they never really talk about it. Like, I want to see a show about that.
I know, because it's interesting. I wonder if they don't know.
They don't know how interesting it is?
No, or they don't know the intricacies of their relationship.
Oh, they didn't have enough information to...
Because he died so young, and only a year or two into their marriage.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's just not well known. Like, that they were married was well known, but maybe not anything too personal. Or maybe it's because it was based on one of George's real life friends that he was like, oh, this is an interesting plot point, but a little too personal to go into all of their let's not air their dirty laundry. And it's like, well, you're airing everyone else's, including yours.
Make up some dirty laundry. Like,
you've fictionalized so much that, like, let's add to it.
Please.
It's interesting. Okay. Do you have any more?
Those were all my loves that I can think of. And Stranger in This World still bangs.
Yeah, my little love from Stranger in This World is just the lyric, on a clear day, I can see myself for miles.
Yep.
Because I think that really just locks you into his brain.
Yeah, that he is self-aware.
That it's loud.
It's loud, but also that he's self-aware, but also deluded. Like, I see myself for miles. It's an ego-driven statement, but also clearer-headed than most ego-driven statements.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You can take it, like, a few different ways, too. Like, I can see myself for miles. Like, I can see where I'm going. I can see where my path is leading me. But also, like, I can see myself, like, oh, on a clear day, I can actually know what's happening in my mind.
Yeah, and maybe I don't like what I see.
And maybe that's what leads me to drugs, but... who's to say? That just shows up in the second act.
The biggest thing I've drawn from this is that you and I need to just punk rock steal the rights to the show and fix it, and then be like, hey, we fixed your show. Are you mad about it? And no one will be that mad.
No. That is also one of my little loves, is just the fact that Rosie saw this show and thought to herself, oh, I can fix that, and had enough money to try, is my dream.
Yep. And
because I've seen many a little show that I'm just like, it's almost there, guys. You just got to do this.
Yep. And to be fair, Rosie fixed a lot of shit. Rosie didn't know what she was doing.
But she had the money to bring it right to Broadway, and it probably needed a workshop first, an out-of-town first, an off-Broadway run first. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe keep it off-Broadway. Do little shop it, and maybe make the room small on purpose.
Exactly. But that, I don't know, in 2003, straight to Broadway you go.
Yeah.
Or if you had the money, I guess. What are my other loves? Out of Fashion.
It's a good song, and it narratively works because you get everyone's, the way they intersect in that song is how tightly I wish they were interacting all the time, because in that song, it really feels like, oh, these are parallel stories that you feel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sorry to cut you
that
off.
That makes sense together. No, I agree. Yeah. And then I also love just the series in the second act of Talk Amongst Yourselves and then Petrified.
Yeah. Petrified, I feel like could have been cut, but also
it could have been cut, but he does so good.
He's fun to no one in this cast is bad still. Like they cast
still, they're great.
Well,
Rollins Sparks is fantastic.
And every character sings the shit out of it. They just don't always add up to a whole. It's the show I feel it is one, a little more style than substance, and two, it is a little less for the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of this individual shit is fine.
And then you put it all together and it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And then my little gripe is that on Spotify, the original Broadway cast album is incorrect.
Mislabeled. It's
just the wrong titles.
That bugs
And it's too. Infuriating.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, it's Petrified? Did they rewrite this song where now it's about fame? And I looked it up. I'm like, no, it's just these tracks are listed wrong.
Yeah, like I was listening to Talk Amongst Yourselves and I was like, oh, I love this song. I'd like... in the like before times, I probably would have put this in my book and like found the sheet music. And I was like, what's it called? Everything Taboo. That can't be this song. So that's just really frustrating.
Yeah.
So have fun with that, guys, if you're listening to it at home.
Yeah. Well, watch both these. It is an interesting experiment. I say watch the London one first, just so you can, if anything, just so you can be like, oh, they cut that India plot point.
Thank God. Yeah. And just, and it's also fun to watch a show evolve. So the way that I did it was like, let's see what it was before.
Yeah. You went, this show used to be something. And you went back. Yeah. You tabooed.
Well,
taboo.
To be fair, I think perhaps other people agree with me because the 2012 revival and tour was the original plot.
Wait, they revived the show? I didn't know that.
In 2012.
Huh.
In London?
Original plot as in has 10 minutes of Philip crowd work and all the narrative kinks still intact?
I don't know exactly how much of the original plot, but it's closer to the original song listings and it's all the original characters.
I agree. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
So
half those characters in the shows are archetypes anyway. It doesn't matter if it's Mark or Billy. You might as well just do a mishmash and see what settles.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, does Harold need to be involved in this show at all?
Harold got dragged by his half-brother that he doesn't talk to a whole lot, and I don't know if he had a great time, but he was happy to see him.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. And that half-brother, furious the phone was going off, but also Lee Bowery dealt with it very quickly, in both versions.
Oh, I bet. Absolutely. All right, we have a Sing Out Louise.
Mm-hmm.
Sing Out Louise!
This part education was never quite part of my plan, but I started all over. I hate a rebuilt as a stand. I'm too fragile and clever, you see, to ever let anything go. So I'm trying to get back something I lost long ago. And you always knew, didn't you, listener? You always knew, as listeners always do. You always knew, didn't you, listener? I'd be a stranger in your world. On a clear day, I can see my old denials. Oh, listener.
Yay!
Didn't you, mother? I was a stranger in this world. On a clear day, I can see.